First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com, where you can go for all the latest podcasts of this show, any new investigations or stories we've got going. While you're at LouisvillePolitics.com or EdSpringsteen.com, we would ask that you please join our email newsletter. Join the thousands and thousands of people before you, and we will send you updates on the website on a weekly or a monthly basis, your choice. We do not do the daily spam. While you're there as well, click on that RSS feed, and we'll make sure the shows get delivered to you as they become available. And if you're so inclined, you like what we do, we appreciate it. Remember, this show and the websites depend on you and your generosity. So any donations or anything else, there is a PayPal link attached. And for you guys who don't like the internet as a way to pay, you can write a donation and make it out and send it to Post Office Box 58146 here in Louisville, Kentucky, 40268. For everybody new to the show, calling numbers as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For everybody else, those that are already in the listening queue, we appreciate it. There are always a bunch of you. Just make sure you hit that number one on the dial pad so we know you want to be heard on air. And the live chat is now open. You can join us there by signing in using Facebook or Twitter. Yes, we have all kinds of options. Welcome, Mr. Martin. How are you, sir?
No, a little wore out, Mr. Springsteen. Just getting that last minute shipping done. Not shopping, shipping at work. You know, a bunch of people got to get it tomorrow, because if they don't get it tomorrow, their industry kind of have shuts down when Christmas falls on Thursday. So,
oh, I hear you, brother.
It's not as bad as a Wednesday, but yeah, a lot of plants and stuff we deal with. We all shrug our shoulders the same way and say, what are you supposed to do with a a Wednesday or a Thursday holiday. It just blows the hell out of production. So it's like, oh, well, there you go.
Well, it blows a whole week, and this time of year it's 2 weeks in a row. So that ain't going to be too daggone bad, I guess. It'll give you a little time off with the family, and I know you need it, man. You've been working your tail off.
It's catch-up time now. We go through, and of course it's getting near the end of the year, so, you know, taxes, inventory taxes and stuff. So a lot of times this time of the year is the worst time of year because you got to start counting things so that, you know, you can pay your fair share of taxes for the right to, you know, try to make a living and pay your fair share of taxes. It goes around that way.
Fair share of taxes. Boy, that's something we don't ever really hear a lot about, is it?
I'm using the government's words there.
Well, I'm actually kind of glad you used the word fair share of taxes, because that's actually going to be one of our lead stories tonight. According to an article late last week, WFPL, of course everybody else covered it too, but I'll use WFPL's version. Kentucky Democratic House leaders announced on Friday that their highest priority in this upcoming legislative session is going to be passing a bill that allows local governments to enact local option sales taxes, or LOST. It's designated as House Bill 1, and essentially this is the same thing that they tried to push through last year, but the State House, including House Speaker Greg Stumbo, decided they didn't like it, so they didn't want it. Now, all of a sudden, Greg Stumbo and the other House leadership is on board with this local option sales tax initiative. But nothing has changed in the language. So what happened from last year to this year? I find that very, very interesting. Do you see the Senate going along with this?
Well, as long as Dan Simon's up there, and they could. I mean, any bill comes down to wording. And you know, the local option sales tax, I'll be honest, I'm halfway in favor of it. You know, it's like, hey, look, if you're going to raise our taxes, at least give us the option to vote on it and tell us exactly what you're going to spend it on. The only thing I don't like about it is it usually in a, you know, shades of the library tax, if, you know, I know you remember that, was it that you've got government, and obviously Mayor Fisher and every Democrat, and probably unfortunately some Republicans on the Metro Council, wouldn't mind seeing it done, and they can use the bully pulpit. So the disparity in the marketing forces is the thing that concerns me the most, is that you've got a mayor, you've got a bunch of people with their nose, their lips firmly planted on the mayor's ass and local government's ass, you know, that are going to line up, not at all unlike they did last time. And they use the bully pulpit, and the anti-tax crowd, you know, they're going to have social media, and they may have a sponsor or two, but, you know, I just think they can actually, they can flower it up and put lipstick on a pig and, you know, tell us all the great things that's going to happen, and it's just not an even, it's not a fair debate. It's not a fair campaign, so a bit concerned about it on that level. But voting, the ability to vote for taxes and say up or down, I like that.
I, for one, am totally against, 100%, no questions asked, bar none, totally against any kind of a local option sales tax. In Louisville, that is just the number one way for this city to find something else to exploit. We don't need new taxes. We just made a decision last week that's gonna cost us jobs here in Louisville. It was the minimum wage argument that the Metro Council passed on Thursday night. We'll get into a little bit of that here in a second. The problem with local option sales taxes and those kind of things, really, truthfully, and I'll use University of Louisville Urban Studies Institute for this, because they actually did a full study on this to see how it was going to work out. And the University of Louisville Urban Studies Institute found that Louisville has the highest income tax rate among the 14 peer cities we compare to. We've been talking about that for a long time. It also, you know, falls right in line with the 2011 national study that ranked Louisville as the fifth most tax-burdened city in the country, and we are falling even further behind. So we've already got major taxes. U of L also pointed out the obvious from their study, that a local option sales tax is going to affect the city's poorest residents, which was those people who are making, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 a year, they're going to be hit the hardest. So when I look at all of this stuff in play, here we are saying we've got to take care of the poor. We pass a minimum wage to $9 an hour, which is going to hurt jobs and hurt our ability to compete with any cities or counties that surround Jefferson County and Kentucky and southern Indiana. So we're destroying our work base, pretending like we're putting more money into the economy. We're already the highest taxed city, you know, the top five in the entire country, the highest among our peer cities. And you put all of these things together, what in the hell is the game here? We don't need a local option sales tax. We need accountable government and less of this Democratic mafia. If you add in the fact the hidden taxes, the surcharge fees for LG&E, the MSD increases, the Louisville Water Company increases that generate profits as the city of Louisville uses as tax revenue, all of these things are huge. You know, and it's also interesting as well, the Fisher's office is claiming that this lost, the local officer sales tax lost, is could bring Louisville $90 million a year if they add just 1% hike to the sales tax. This number, to me, is not arbitrary, because last week, David James, before the Metro Council meeting, was talking about how a new minimum wage would give us $90 million more a year spent in Louisville. That number, $90 million, has floated around in too many different areas, in too many places, for too many different things. This is nothing more than by design. I don't know what the payoff was to Greg Stumbo, but I'm sure it's going to pass the House, and I'm praying like hell that the Senate knocks it back. We don't need more taxes. We need accountable government and less taxes in Louisville to compete. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to listen to that number, and I hear 90 million off 1%. So I'm thinking, just real quick math, without actually looking, that should be about $9 billion worth of purchases if you're going to do a sales option. It's like, is the Louisville economy that big?
Of course not.
I guess it's retail and service, because, you know, it's a sales tax. That's an awfully optimistic sounding number to me. But like I say, I'm all for, you know, I think, again, if I were in the state legislature, I would say, yeah, I'd support a local option sales tax, but only if, you know, other taxes, you know, including that aren't even classified as newer, you know, the newer taxes, but things like we're talking about, like the LG&E stuff, if all taxes and all fees had a 5-year or 10-year lifespan on them where they had to be approved by the voters. I mean, I like the idea of being able to go vote up or down on taxes. It would be hilarious for me if they made it retroactive. You know, well, you look at the MSD tax and go, you know what? Hey, guess what? We don't like it. We're voting it out. Find the money somewhere else. But,
well, that's exactly what they should be doing anyway. I mean, the realistics are,
as long as there's a fair vote, you know, if it's just like you know, some kid wants to stick his finger in the fan, tell him
right.
not to, go ahead and do it. But I'm just worried. Mostly, my concern is like I say, and I know you were in the middle of that fight, was the library tax. And I remember the Mayor Abramson lying to everybody up in government. Everybody in government was all for it. You know, and you and a few others came out against it. And it was a David and Goliath fight. And I just don't think if you're going to, you know, you can butter that stuff up and gussy it up. As long as you're only getting one side of the story, I am afraid that people are going to get suckered into it.
Well, the library tax was defeated for a couple of reasons, but, you know, it really came down to getting information out. We had a lot of grassroots guys out there like myself. I was on the ground running, pounding the hell out of stopping it. We had a lot of other people like me that were out there fighting against it. But we also had a benefactor. Chris Thieneman actually spent thousands of dollars of his own money buying the TV time, the radio ads, and everything else to disseminate the information. And, you know, that helped a great deal stopping that travesty that Louisville was trying to cram down our throats under Abramson. And to me, this is the same situation. This is going to do nothing to aid us. It's just going to separate us further. And when you couple that in conjunction with the planned announcement between Greg Fisher and GLI last week of this so-called Advancing Greater Louisville initiative that GLI has come up with, that Greg Fisher is going to fund after pulling $950,000 from GLI. I know he's going to deny they're doing anything like that, but he's lying. Let me tell you that. I promise you that. You know, they are going to this 16-county regionalization plan. We're already, you know, selling off our soul to Southern Indiana. Look at the growth of Southern Indiana over the last decade. We're selling off our soul to Southern Indiana. Now we're trying to advance this 16-county so-called regionalization plan, and that does nothing but leave Louisville further behind. And that's why they continue trying to cram these taxes down our throat. They're destroying Louisville. They're trying to turn us into the next Detroit is what they're trying to do. And we've got to fight against that. So I am in no way, shape, or form on board of a local option sales tax. There are so many better ways to run this city, and going forward, we will be able to get into a lot of that, because I will make one quick announcement. For 18 months now, one of the two projects that I've been working on with some investors and some other people that are going to help move Louisville forward and take care of Louisville business and help create jobs and growth and expansion here, as it should be, not in Southern Indiana. We decided to put together a business 18 months ago that's going to compete with the city of Louisville and Greater Louisville, Inc. It's called the Louisville Board of Trade. That is now online for people to review. We are out actively promoting it effective today. And, you know, of course, with the holidays the next couple of weeks, it's just a little soft launch. We'll do a major announcement after the first of the year. But you can go to LouisvilleBoardOfTrade.com for any business that listens to anything that we do. Go to LouisvilleBoardOfTrade.com and take our survey over there. I am the communications director for that entity as well as the other one. And I am going to plug them because, by God, we finally have something that's going to hold the leadership in this city and in Frankfort, the state of Kentucky as well, accountable to what's best for Louisville. But, you know, one of the things that's really interesting, too, that came out last week, Ed, is Warren County, Kentucky. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this or not.
Oh, yeah.
But Warren County, Kentucky.
Home of the Corvette plant. Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. There you go, in Bowling Green. You know, Kentucky is not a right-to-work state. But Warren County decided they wanted to become a right-to-work county. So local officials in Warren County voted on a measure that is going to make Warren County essentially a right-to-work county, that workers in you know, are not going to be required to join a union or pay union dues as a condition of employment. The first reading was last week. It passed with a 5-1 vote. The only person voting against it was Magistrate Tommy Hunt, a Democrat. Of all things, imagine that, you know, and the second reading was scheduled for Friday, and it was followed by a formal vote, and it was passed. So what does this do anything? I mean, is this going to stick? Because you know it's going to be challenged in the legal system. Is this a way forward? Is this a way that Kentucky can do this one county at a time to finally be competitive?
Well, you know, I think it's worth noting that Warren County is, although there's a little bit of green patch between them and Tennessee, Warren County is close to Tennessee, which is a right-to-work state. So, you know, I can see why they did it. As with anything, it gets down to how it's written. I'm not, you know, it's not anti-union, not one of these people that's going to sit there and say, well, you know, let's do right-to-work, bust the unions, and the business owners can run their business the way they want to. You know, not into that. I understand the whole contract. I think it comes down to, you know, how is it written? That's the case with anything. I mean, if now I'll be real honest, you have something to do with that because we've had numerous discussions, but I don't see it as fair. You know, if they're going to do right to work, then at some point there has to be some differentiation in compensation and security and stuff like that between the union employees and the non-union employees. You know, there's certain securities and things that are earned, lobbied for, you know, fought for from the union that I just, you know, I'm not so sure that a guy can just come in, realize all those benefits, and then say, oh, yeah, but I ain't paying. Yeah, I ain't joining the union, but I want all the stuff.
Now,
so,
you know, I got
to
tell you.
To me, it depends on how it's written. You know, I would say I am pro right to work, but not, you know, insofar as it's not pushed, it's not designed in a way that's just solely to destroy unions, as some right to work legislation is. So, hey, sticky matter. It's like, I haven't read that legislation down there, but then again, if they were elected and if they ran on that and they were elected to do that, and then, you know, they said they were going to do it before they got elected in. You know, I'm not privy to, you know, I didn't follow the elections in Warren County, but if that's what they ran on and that's what they said they were going to do, then more power to them for actually doing it. So court
here's the thing, though.
Oh, you know it.
Oh, there's definitely going to be court challenges. But here's the thing, though. The majority of Kentuckians in every poll, and every poll that's been taken over the last few years, the majority of Kentuckians want Kentucky to be a right-to-work state. So when we talk about, do these politicians run as that being one of their objectives and they're doing the right thing by standing up, you know, the majority of Kentuckians want it. It's the Democratic leadership in Frankfort that refuses to allow it to be talked about in the House. And
yeah.
That's Greg Stubble and the Democratic leadership. When we, you know, just to talk just for a second here, Darrell Owens is now taking over Larry Clark's position in the Kentucky House.
God.
And now all of a sudden, the local option sales tax is their number one objective this January. You know, this is all pure politics. It's all it's ever been. But it is interesting when you look at Warren County, because Fulton County and Simpson County both had their first readings and unanimously approved right-to-work ordinance. Their second readings are going to take place next week on the 29th and 30th. You know, so With all of this in mind, there are other counties that are jumping on board, you know, and I have to agree with a lot of the people who are talking. They're talking, you know, telling us that we've been losing out to Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Indiana, and Michigan. Those are all right-to-work states. Everything that surrounds Kentucky is taking our business, and then we've got local leadership saying we're going to give you more business, not just because we don't have right-to-work legislation, but now we're going to raise wages in one specific county, and, you know, we don't care about the businesses there. So this is a major, serious challenge for Kentucky, but it's a big challenge for us in Louisville to bring all this together. So, you know, do they have the legal authority to advance these things because state hasn't? I personally think that they do. Now, of course, Eldon Renaud, who's the president of the UAW Local 2164, says that they don't. He says this thing can only be done through state law. But, you know, I would expect nothing less from the UAW. And quite frankly, you talk about, you know, should they get to enjoy the benefits without paying for it? I'll be honest with you. And, you know, when I talk to UAW workers, because I still have plenty of people at Ford Motor Company that are still, you know, that are good friends of mine that talk to me. And I talk to people from there all the time. They contact me talking about stuff. The UAW, and they are reflective of everybody else, Teamsters and so on. You know, these unions today aren't doing anything for the employees. The unions have basically essentially sold out to the companies. I know the working people at Ford Motor Company right here in Louisville, especially at LAP, are disgusted because they don't have any union in their opinion. The majority tell us that the union doesn't do one damn thing for them. They can negotiate their own contracts. If they're going to get $15 an hour to start, Ford's going to pay that anyway. And they don't feel like the union's done one thing to help them. The benefits go up every year since the UAW took over the benefits at Ford Motor Company. They now take care of all the benefits. So the benefit costs have skyrocketed. The wages have went down. And if there's anything going on in plant that the company is, you know, violating the contract on, the union says get over it. Do it anyway. So they might as well not have a contract. Those are serious issues. The union is breaking themselves up. I don't blame Right to Work for that. You know what I mean? That's the big deal for me.
I agree. I know, you know, some unions are still good. Some, but yeah, I've heard that about Ford too. And you know, the unions at GE, they're same deal. They're, you know, the jobs. I joke, you know, sometimes the jobs that they once were that now you used to be able to get on at Ford or GE, you know, you could start thinking about buying a house. You know, there was a good pay, good benefits. But now they're not real far removed from, you know, an assistant manager at a McDonald's.
That's very true. I think that's a good way to put it. And, you know, when we look at all of this in play, it tells me there's definitely room for us to go right to work. If the majority already want it, and the majority of this state has said that they do in every poll taken, the very least they can do is put it on a ballot and let us vote. But they refuse to do that, but they want to throw local option sales taxes down our throat. It's interesting, too. Jason Nemus, former House Rep. Mike Nemus' son, Jason Nemus, is an attorney in Louisville, and Jason's a friend of the show, and he is an attorney who's trying to coordinate the legal defense of these ordinances because, you know, this is going to be legally challenged, so he is the defense attorney in this. And he points out a Section 14B, and I've looked at this, and I believe he's right, but Section 14B of the Taft-Hartley Act gives states the power that to delegate the authority to pass right-to-work laws through what they call home rule. What that means is they can, you know, they give the states, they can delegate their authority to each county to do what they want to do. And they have. We've got precedent for a lot of that. So, you know, I don't think we have much issue with that. Now, the reason I bring all this into play, we're getting into right-to-work, I mean, let's talk about this minimum wage. Let's talk about this, because here in Louisville, we're talking about a $9 minimum wage, and we're hearing all of these daggone people screaming, well, you can't be against minimum wage because it's going to help us and everybody's going to have more money, and nobody's looking at the obvious. Of course, it was a party line vote on Thursday night at the Metro Council. It was 16-9 was the final vote. Jim King, as Metro Council president, did not vote, which is not that unusual. He doesn't vote on a lot of things if he doesn't have to. He is council president. So, you know, we look at that vote. Every Democrat voted for it. Every Republican voted against it. We knew it was going to pass because the Democrats control the council. Here's the question. Why is it that these Metro Council members can't use common sense and logic? Greg Fisher himself said that raising the minimum wage was going to cost 2,000 Louisville jobs. Now, here's the rub, Ed. In Louisville, we have 592,000 employed people, only 2,000 of which would be affected by minimum wage based on their own admission. So you're looking at less than 3,000ths, or I'm sorry, you're looking at 3,000ths of 1%. And it's going to cost us now over $680,000 a year as a government to institute it, monitor it, and everything else. We're going to raise taxes to offset that cost. That's why the local office sales tax is so important to these guys. And the cost of business is going to skyrocket because even Jim King, as a banker and an employer, should clearly know that if you give a $1.50 an hour raise to one segment, then everybody that works for you is going to get the same $1.50 an hour raise. That means the cost of goods goes up. So on a $40, let's just assume for argument's sake that it's a dollar flat across the board for minimum wage. You're going to make $40 more a week minus taxes. That comes down to 28 to 30. Let's call it 30 on the high end.
Let's be honest. You're talking minimum wage. You said 40. Truth of the matter is the other side of that equation is most minimum wage jobs are very, very part-time.
Sure. But I'm going to be a good guy here and assume that these minimum wage jobs are full-time jobs. You're going to make $40 more a week at $1 an hour. $30 is what you're actually going to take home after your tax liability. Out of that $30, since every employer had to raise wages for every employee they've got, not just the 2,000, now 592,000 people get their wages raised by a dollar, that cost has to be passed on to the consumer. And when that cost gets passed on to the consumer, when your canned goods go up a nickel, your bread goes up 10 cents, the cost of trucking that stuff to a business goes up, all of that gets added in. It's going to cost you a hell of a lot more than the $30 a week that you're getting to offset that cost. And that's how it all starts and that's how it all rolls. In addition, we're going to add more revenue that we have to collect in taxes to pay for the oversight. It's the dumbest liberal stunt I've ever seen. Would you agree?
Oh, I'd agree. And I'd say a few other things, too, that, you know, based on your wages, your employee has to match your Social Security, your Medicare taxes, for their taxes, are based on your earnings. And another one that people don't stop to think about, Kentucky has one of the most screwed up states going for this, is work comp. Work comp insurance and work comp payout is based on how much you make. So all that's going up too. Now, and having said that, I got to give a big hats off to Marilyn Parker, because actually she is a wellspring of information on this, right up to and how she blasted the Metro Council for this duct tape together thing they came up with.
I saw her post on Facebook.
It's got exemptions. It's got exemptions all over the place, like list of exemptions. You know, if you don't make X amount of gross profit a year, you're exempt. If you don't, you know, under this many employees, you're exempt. And it's just like there's so many exemptions that it's not doing anybody any good anyway. Yeah, they shot it. Not only did they cave on it, and just to show you how ridiculous and how grandstandy-assed and stupid are the Democrats on the Metro Council can be, you do know what the starting wage is at McDonald's, right?
It's more than minimum wage.
It's $8.83 an hour. So these courageous dillweeds on this Metro Council, they topped a McDonald's starting wage by 17 cents, and they're going to save the freaking planet. And the poor people will rejoice. It's like, did you just give me a break?
Even Walmart and Myers paid for that.
The amount they raised it is useless. The amount the amount of exemptions is laughable. As I've said before, it's not the dollar amount. So very few people, especially that are trying to provide for a house. You know, I hope, you know, I'm sorry I have to say this, but if you're trying, if all you can pull is a minimum wage job, knowing that McDonald's starts out at $8.83, then, and you're trying to support a family on it, then you're pretty, you know, you're pretty dense. You're real dense. So,
you're not doing anything to better your life.
Maybe you should hand the kids off to grandma and grandpa because you ain't too bright. But beyond that, the thing that, as a business owner, I laugh on one hand because I'm not in Louisville.
I know, but you try to be. Let's make that distinction clear, because
the
reason you're not here. Well, I mean, let's make this clear, though. You wanted to be in Louisville. They would not work with you to come to Louisville, and they tried to jack you up, and that's how you ended up in Bullock County.
Yeah, well, it Louisville was, in some cases, we got jerked around. In some cases, we were let it know to us that, yeah, they weren't real enthusiastic about us, and Bullock County was really enthusiastic about us. So, yeah, they got us, and they've been going great ever since. But to me, the thing as a business owner, doesn't matter where you're located.
Right.
I think what businesses dislike about it most, and I have ranted to this effect, is most of the Metro Council, you throw them in there, your Dan Johnson, your Attica Scotts, your whomever's, they don't create jobs. They don't run businesses. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. They don't know the trials and tribulations and sometimes celebrations of joys of running a business. They know nothing of it. They're a bunch of, in some cases, they got a two-thirds away through a sociology degree in high school or college, and they're going to tell businesses how to do it because they read an article somewhere that somebody in Berkeley wrote about, raise minimum wage. Yeah, it's something like that. The upsetting thing is there are people out there, some without high school education, some with college, some with math. There are all sorts of types of business owners out there. I know them all. And they work their ass off to build a business. And as much as anything, they just simply don't want, you know, it's not the $9 an hour. It's not things like that. It's the fact that somebody who has nothing to do with their business, didn't do anything to build their business, knows nothing about running a business, takes it upon themselves because during an election, after spending $5,000, they got 675 votes. And now they think they can tell every business owner in the city of Louisville how to run his business. And business owners, having a measure of pride, are extremely offended by that. That's where I land on it. I'm not even affected by it, but I just sometimes look at who in the hell are you to tell me how to run my business, you non-job creating douchebags.
Well, I totally agree with you there. And that's the problem. You know, they continue to want to try to tell us how to do everything. But what these buffoons don't understand, and they are buffoons. Well, they understand it, but they just don't care. I mean, like Greg Fisher, he don't have any skin in the game in Louisville. His business is in southern Indiana. That's where he makes his money at. The Louisville mayor. When you look at a lot of the leadership, so-called leadership, you know, throughout government or even GLI, a lot of these people live where? Southern Indiana, Bullitt County, Shelby County. Wonder why everybody wants to regionalize? So they can get closer to home and make money and screw Louisville. Yet somehow these are the people who are the leaders of Louisville. Get real. You know, but we look at a lot of this stuff. So we're looking at the minimum wage of $9 an hour. Okay, we have to look at all of that. Then we continue to look at this so-called $90 million in new money, which is garbage. All right. We got to talk about right to work. And here's something that's really interesting here, because there's a story coming out. A guy by the name of Michael Romanchuk. He actually got fired from his job. He wasn't downsized. He was just let go. His employer loved his performance and everything else. But the reason he was let go was because he was not a dues-paying member to the Teamsters. This was in Wisconsin. He was hired in June of last year. This March, the Teamsters sent him a letter demanding he pay dues, including back dues, and he refused. He'd been working 9 months for this company without even realizing that he was supposed to be represented by the Teamsters. So if you're working for a company 9 months and you don't even see a union steward in 9 months, that ought to tell you a lot about what the union is doing wrong in the first place. But they wanted him to pay them $600 for a year representation that he wasn't even, didn't even know he was being represented, didn't know anything about it. The union told him they would have him fired if he didn't pay, and he still refused. So the Teamsters went to the boss, a Pepsi bottling plant in Pennsylvania, told the boss we want him fired because he's not paying union dues. So the Pepsi bottling plant fired him. There was no right to work law in effect. It's that kind of stuff that's the problem, because a company and union can do anything they want to do, and they do today. Unions do no longer are needed, in my opinion. I mean, I've been a big union supporter most of my life, but you're not dealing with the atrocities of the 40s and 50s and 60s anymore. What you're dealing with today is the atrocities of collusion between union leadership and the company that they purport to, the company that they're working for. And I say that the union leadership is working for that company because I think that's true. The unions have become the same corporate entity that they always railed against. They have outlived their usefulness because they have been just as corrupt, if you will, as the companies they say they represent. So This is very interesting. Then, of course, you throw on all the other arguments that we really need to get into, like the prevailing wage arguments in Kentucky. You know, we have this so-called prevailing wage where you're paying somebody $25 or $30 an hour per man hour on a job that, you know, can be done with the private sector for $15. Well, if you throw in 1,000 man hours at a $10 difference on every job, that's $10,000 for every 1,000 man hours. You know what I mean? All of that adds up to our cost. We've got a lot of ways and a long way to go, in my opinion. But this is ridiculous. And I want to point this out to you because I really want some comment from you here. But Gary Castile, who is the Southern Regional Director for the United Auto Workers. Now, if you remember, I gave you a quote a minute ago about Warren County, right? And I used a UAW leadership quote saying that it's illegal and can't be done. Well, here is Gary Castile, the Southern Regional Director for the UAW. And he makes a statement that says, I've never understood why people think right to work hurts unions. To me, it helps them. You don't have to belong to a union if you don't want to. So if I go to an organizing drive, I can tell these workers, if you don't like this arrangement, then you don't have to belong. And he says, that gives me credibility. Then, if you don't think the system's earning its keep, then you don't have to pay. It puts the onus on us to do our job. And I agree with Gary Castile. And this is the Southern Regional Director for the United Auto Workers. And that's exactly what right to work is supposed to give you. And here is a union top director telling the whole world, I've got no problem with right to work. Make me earn your keep. Make me earn your trust. Make me earn your dues. He's saying, bring it on. I've got to do my job. I have to produce. And I've got no problem with being held accountable to that. Go ahead.
I think he should be the new head of the UAW.
Amen.
And that's a beautiful statement, because, you know, when I was a candidate, every once in a while I'd ask, you know, libertarian people would say, well, how do you feel about unions? And I'd say they have every right to exist just like any other business. Yeah, and sometimes guys take offense at that, but most of them understood. It's like, look, the union, there is, without a doubt, there is strength in numbers. And there is, and in so doing, there's also simplicity in that, too. The companies, like some companies, like the one, I'm trying to think of the plant, the Volkswagen plant or whatever it was down south, they want a union because it simplifies things for them. They can say, okay, we negotiate with, you know, these six guys at the table and we're done. you have authority. You speak on behalf of 13,000 people. Thank God we don't have to talk to 13,000 people. You represent them? Good. So there are good things, especially in larger companies. It really simplifies the personnel stuff with, you know, and that's a huge issue with a lot of companies. So, yeah, and the unions can push their value. And it's I think that's probably one of the greatest quotes from a union guy I have ever heard. I mean, it's just,
well, if you
I'm
think about
it. It's like, you know, I wouldn't want the union coming into our place. We treat our employees right and everything. But I would have infinitely more respect if a union guy, if somebody ever did try to organize a company and then came in and said, hey, look, we can bring value. You know, granted, I got 30-something employees. You're not bringing any value to me. I have a personal relationship with every one of them. But,
right.
Yeah, somebody that's got a couple thousand employees, union can step up and say, we can bring value to both sides of the table. You know, we can simplify things for people. We can, you know, we can represent the employees so you don't get stomped on. You can look at the company and says, and we're a buffer between, you know, all the human resources crap that goes on. We'll help you consolidate it into one contract, and it'll be great. Yep.
Well, you know,
that's what they should market it as.
Well, quite frankly, I just want to point out, because Volkswagen and German manufacturers do it exactly the way that you just talked about, and it has worked very successfully for their employees and employers. They have had a lot of success. So you're absolutely right there. Go ahead.
I was going to say, as a matter of fact, one of the things I was finishing up at work a little late tonight, you know, and the unions are also very good at training people. Even though my shop is not union, there are certain trades that I am a snob about, and I will not have a non-union electrician come into my shop because the union guys are really good. You know, I just throw that out there. They train people. Unions, especially in the trades, they do a fantastic job at training people so that, you know, if you deal with a union contractor, like electricians, you know that the guy that coming in is not a shock absorber.
Right.
Which is otherwise known as a stupid electrician.
No, I got all that. But I tell you, I also agree with Gary Castile here because, you know, Gary Castile, the Southern Regional Director for the United Auto Workers Union, he also points out the obvious. It's a lot easier to go to an organizing drive and tell you guys that, you know, if you don't like this, you know, vote us in. And if you don't like what we're doing, you don't have to belong to us. It's up to us to earn that. You know, but instead, this is why it's so hard for unions. I would think it would be easier for unions to organize, because instead, now they go in and they have to say, if we get 50% of you, then all of you have to belong, whether you like it or not. You know, it creates a division. It creates an argumentative situation. You know, when you give people a choice, a real choice, you know, hey, vote us in. If you don't like it, opt out. That's your business. You know, versus it's one of you or none, or it's all of you or none of you. I got to be honest with you. If I was a non-union employee without any union background, and I understand it's hard to separate that because I have a union background. But if I'm a non-union employee without a union background, and a man comes in and says, hey, give us a chance, vote us in, give us a chance. If you don't like it, you don't have to pay any dues. You can opt out. you know, I'm probably going to listen to that guy. But if I get a guy that says, comes in and says, you know, we're going to give 50% of you, and once we get 50% of you, the other 50% that don't like us, tough shit, you're going to pay us anyway, I'm not going to listen to that guy at all. I'm going to feel threatened, and
now,
nobody's going to threaten me.
No, not only that, but you remember back when the Obama administration first came in, what was that voter, union ballot ID thing that they had where you had to vote? The union knew if you voted up or down. I mean, they were really going in for the strong arms. I mean,
oh yeah,
I work for myself, but I mean, I'm with you. It's like, yeah, if a guy sits there and says, hey, I can, let me show you the value I bring to the table. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm saying, all right. You know, you said the magic word, value. I'm interested. But if you're sitting there saying, hey, you know, we're going to come in, we want to get 50% of the vote, and we're going to know which way you voted because we're going to watch. We'll be watching
right.
how you vote. And we want you to belong to the union. We want to get a union in here, and we're going to watch. And if we get it in here, we get 50.1%, and you're part of that 49.9%, we're going to know it, you little SOB. You know, like at that point, I'm like, get out of here. You know, I don't want to deal with people like that.
No, we're going to take your money. We're not going to represent you because you didn't vote for us anyway, so screw you. Sort of sounds sort of like politicians, don't it?
Yeah.
You know, so
sounds like something Dan Johnson would put on Facebook. I'm not listening. If you voted for me, I'll listen to you.
Well, let me tell you something about Dan Johnson since you brought him up. There was also a story out last week. You know, after Dan Johnson went through all the public humiliation and disgrace of getting caught bouncing checks, you know, and not paying his bills, he requested his own audit of his office funds to assure his constituents that he was above board in spending. The audit came back last week, and they found no discrepancies that Dan Johnson has actually been using his funds the way that he's supposed to and is trustworthy surrogate, if you will, of our tax money. So as much as we tease Dan Johnson, let's give him some props here, because I tell you, I expected them to find all kinds of stuff, because when you get into money trouble, a lot of times you'll play like that, you know, and do things you wouldn't normally do. And I was expecting them to find something, but the audit came back and he was free and clear. Now, on the downside of that, he owes over $800 something to the city for bouncing his personal check to pay for his personal calls on his city-issued cell phone. Here's a problem I've got. If I owed City of Louisville a dime, they are going to petition the courts and garnish my wages until they get that money. That is a normal process for the City of Louisville. If you owe them money, they're going to get it. They're going to take your tax refunds. They're going to garnish your paycheck. They're going to do something to make sure they get paid. So I do take issue with the fact that if Dan Johnson owes us $800-something and he's owed it for over a year, he wrote another check to cover it that bounced earlier this summer, so he's written two bounce checks on it. Why is it that the City of Louisville, who actually prints his paycheck and gives him his paycheck, doesn't automatically take a certain amount out each pay period until it's paid off in full? They would with me or you. Why is it that he's not? So that is an issue I have, but that's a City of Louisville issue, not a Dan Johnson issue. But I'm glad you brought it up, because I meant to bring that up Thursday night and point that out, and I didn't get a chance to. So, you know, Dan's books came back fine. So what do we say now? You know?
Well, he's that's fine. So he didn't steal money from the taxpayers a la
right.
Judy Green or Barbara Sankoff
right.
or whatever.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like, okay, so he didn't do anything criminal. He's still a man who votes for things like how to tell you how to run your business as far as the minimum
right.
wage go. A man who will go out and champion a local option sales tax to, you know, whatever, paint brighter yellow stripes on a certain highway or something. I don't know what they're going to come up with. You know, it's just, again, thank you for not being totally corrupt, but still not the guy you give the pen that, you know, cast a vote on how my tax dollars are spent.
Oh, I won't disagree with you there. I'm not saying that Dan's the brightest bulb in the light bulb pack. I'm just saying I was interested. It was interesting, and I was actually surprised about that outcome. because I did expect some discrepancies there, and there were none. I think they had one small one. They use a sliding scale to determine which roads to pave. And according to the sliding scale, you have to have a 55 or below to qualify to have a road paved. And there's a road that runs in front of Dan Johnson's house, and his house is up for sale. He doesn't even live there anymore. But there is a road that runs in front of his house that got repaved, and the scoring system gave him a 56 for that road, not a 55. So he was just 1 point above that, and I really have no problems with that. I didn't think that was too much discretion, but that was the only thing they found, so I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, Ed, I want to get something in real quick. This racist crap will not go away, and I blame President Obama, Eric Holder, half of the daggone Congress, the National Black Leadership, the NAACP, racist Al Sharpton, a racist Jesse Jackson, and the list goes on and on for this. Saturday, we had two New York police officers killed while just sitting in their car as part of an exercise. Sunday morning, there was a Florida officer killed, you know, the same way, just assassinated. You know, never saw it coming. These things are clearly because of the racist antics of mainstream media and the racist antics of the rioters and looters in Ferguson, Missouri, and beyond. I tell you, the reason, for one thing, prayers to those families of these officers, but this is what these officers have to deal with every day, and we wonder why we have situations like Mike Brown or Eric Garner that led to the protest. But the NAACP Legal Defense Fund came out today with a statement. And that statement actually condemned the murder of the two New York police officers Sunday, which was great. Except then they had to follow it up as part of their statement to demand gun control and try to convince everybody that none of these officers' assassinations had any connection to the protest against police, you know, after the death of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. And I have to say, bullshit. Because the guy that shot the two New York police detectives, or the guy that shot the two New York police officers, had put it on social media, Twitter, everything else you could possibly get his hands on, to tell the whole world he was going to take two for one, you know, to honor Mike Brown and Eric Garner. It was clearly obvious it was related. And these go out there, and these guys go out there and try to act like it has to be about gun control, not racism, and it surely was. Their statement said that while some may suggest a causal link between these killings and a recent protest focused on the serious issue of police violence against unarmed African Americans, you know, let's not escalate this tense national state through rumor and conjecture. And then they go on to point out that, you know, this had nothing to do with those situations. What's your opinion on this? Because I tell you, it's very disturbing to hear that lack of
you. I call bullshit on that. You know, the fact of the matter is as we've spoken many a time, and we try to keep it balanced, there are some really, you know, there's some cops out there causing problems. And I often lament that it's those cops that are making things more dangerous to the good cops. And this is the point in illustration. These cops, by all accounts, were good cops, and they got shot indirectly because of the actions of some cops who are not so good. Now, having said that, it's yes, absolutely. When they have these marches and everything, and you know, you've got to think, it's just like the Trayvon thing and everything else. When you've got tensions are high, and you've got professional baiters like Jackson and Sharpton and student activists who are trying to make a name for themselves, you know, saying radical things. When you get people stoked up, it's just a matter of statistics. So, you know, however many millions of people in a given city, you're going to, whether you realize it or not, you're going to connect with that nut job out there. You're going to give him the nudge he needs to, you know, to take up his cause, you know, just like Timothy McVeigh, piece of crap, you know, but there was some rhetoric out there, got some things going, and he snapped. And then it's the same as this guy that shot the cops. Is it probably unstable, angry, probably criminal, you know, just a low-life human being. He just needed that nudge. He needed that validation. That, you know, if you keep sinning, you keep having your marches, you keep having your die-ins, and you keep demonizing the police without acknowledging it on the same hand that they're a very, very small minority, and most of the cops are just, you know, they're coaching softball for their daughters on the weekend kind of guys. Yeah, they're absolutely guilty. They have stoked it. They have stoked the fears. And it, you know, like you said, I don't think it's any small. It's no coincidence that the guy who shot these two cops was a black man, because he has been, you know, he might have been teetering, he might have been unstable prior to this. They pushed him over the edge. They gave it, you know, they validated that kind of thinking. They validated that kind of behavior through these massive marches and all this celebrity that they're giving people who don't deserve celebrity.
I totally agree with that, and that's the problem. And, you know, in the case of these two New York officers, as we found out after this, I mean, the shooter actually killed himself. But as we found out later, this shooter had killed his girlfriend Saturday morning and then just calmly walked up to them and started shooting them. I mean, it was almost like a scene out of the Bronx in New York. It's an older movie about New York police in the Bronx and a rough precinct. But, you know, it was a pretty good movie. You ought to watch that. But it really was. It was pathetic. And to sit here and say that this had no correlation to me just tells me once again that the so-called leadership of the black community is nothing more than a farce. If you can't recognize and acknowledge the real problem that exists, then you shouldn't be in a leadership position. I tell you what, man, we're fast out of time. Final thoughts, my friend.
Oh, final thoughts. You know, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Because, like I say, we talk about it a lot. And it's just a matter for me, it's like, guys, you know, and we talk about this stuff a lot. And we talk about blasting the Baiters as well, too, no matter what side they come from. People, calm the hell down. You know, were the deaths at the hand of police unjustified? Yeah, in my opinion, they were. Then they were mistakes. And there's nothing to be gained from it. And it's like we said before, you've got guys like Jackson and stuff trying to make themselves relevant, and they're stoking it up. And especially after this gun down, it's like, look, they're doing their job. Most of them, the vast majority, are doing their job well. They're putting up with the worst society has to offer them and not beating their ass, which is more than I could do. And you know what? People just need to calm down. When a problem has been identified, let's talk our way through it. Let's not keep the heated rhetoric up, you know, and this goes all the way up to and including the police unions turning their backs on de Blasio. I think, you know, that's a fine act. that was kind of cool. But, you know, the police need to, everybody needs to sit down, calm down, and say, look, we need to talk our way through this, because in the end, we're all still, you know, we're somebody's son, we're somebody's daughter, we're many, many police officers and other people. They have sons and daughters. Like, look, all we want to do is get along, keep our family warm and fed. Can we shelve this crap where, you know, we're talking about wars and revolutions and things like that. And so everybody needs to step back, take it down a few notches, because the whole world's watching, and we're looking like fools.
You know, I have to agree with you. And I tell you, it's not just this. I mean, everything, you know, a lot of people get angry with me. They think that I'm just this crazy conservative white guy. I've been called a racist devil. I've been called all kinds of things over the last few weeks, and that's okay. I can take the criticism. Lord knows I dish enough of it out right here on the show. But I've got to say here, you know, there just does seem to be, whether you believe in conspiracy theories or not, there seems to be an orchestrated effort from the top down over the last 6 years to destroy America. And I have to say that very clearly. We have too many examples, too many scandals, too many things we can't get the answers to. We've got a president who was out there saying Trayvon Martin could be his son. He sends people to Ferguson on behalf of Michael Brown, who is a thug and a criminal. He sends people to New York on behalf of Eric Garner, and we have police officers shot and killed, and he has to play a round of golf before he can go out and address the media on it. He doesn't stand up for people here unless you're black. That is the impression, rightly or wrongly, that is the impression from leadership down, him and Eric Holder both. And when you couple that with the national issues that have been going on lately, North Korea just has Sony Pictures back down from releasing a damn movie of all things. Like we're supposed to be scared of that. When we add all that up and we add in the other things, we just found out that we didn't just release three prisoners for one with Cuba last, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, who was released. We released five Taliban for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, an Army deserter, earlier this year. We also found out that included a $5 billion payoff to Qatar for it. So now we're buying the freedom of terror, of American deserters, and we're giving away terrorists for free. It makes no sense to me. We've destroyed our image and our reputation on the world stage. We have divided the American people along the lines I haven't seen since the 60s. And all by design, in my opinion. Folks, it's time to wake up. Understand what it is like to be an American. To be an American means freedom, but we aren't free. I will stand up for my brothers, and I could care less about your skin color. But for God's sake, let's take America back. Land of the free, home of the brave. We're never going to get there by allowing this kind of national or foreign policy to continue to exist. That's it for tonight. Matter of fact, folks, that's it this week for me, period. Dale the Truth will be here tomorrow night with his TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. Wednesday and Thursday, we will not have live shows for obvious reasons. It's Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And let me tell you, if you're going to spend your Christmas Eve and Christmas Day sitting around listening to political shows and talking about world events, you need to get away from your computer. Go spend some time with your family. Find someone to enjoy the holidays with. Okay? Lord knows we need some quality time away from these messes. And Wednesday and Thursday, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day is a great opportunity. I'll see you guys next week on Monday. Have a great week, Mr. Martin. Thank you so much.
You the same.
All right, sir. Take care. See you, folks. Have a good one.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.